Hello and welcome to MedPod, the official CPD podcast for Maiden Early Trust staff by Maiden Early Trust staff. In each episode, we are joined by a member of Trust staff to share their area of expertise, interest or research in the hope that it will inspire our listeners to try out something new in their own practice. Hello and welcome to the first episode of MedPod for the academic year 2023-24. We're really looking forward to another year of providing high quality, on-demand, continuous professional learning resources for Trust staff, by Trust staff, and enabling the sharing of best practice across all of our different schools. So to kick us off for this academic year, we are absolutely delighted to welcome Josh Risky, Head of Drama and Assistant Head for Year 9. Josh, I was wondering if you could give us a bit of background about your career journey so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I went to university, Arts University Bournemouth, graduated in 2013. I then worked as a voice actor. I worked in the entertainment industry for quite a while, but then realised that my passion lies elsewhere. So I did my teacher training in 2016, was fortunate enough to be offered a job here at Maiden Early starting July 2017. And since then, I've taken on many roles within the school, started off as a newly qualified teacher, then became house ambassador for Bolt, then became head of drama last year, as well as working as an assistant head of year and just continuing professional development within this workplace, and very lucky to be here.
Fantastic, thank you, Josh. So we're very excited that Josh will actually be sharing the results of his action research project, which he completed through the Maiden Early Institute Pastoral Leadership Development Programme, Intercultural Capital. So I was wondering, Josh, if you could just start by giving us a bit of an overview of what you are going to be talking about with us today.
Yeah, so today we're going to be looking at the ins and outs of what cultural capital actually means, not just defining the term cultural capital, but also looking at how it can take place within a school and possibly introducing some ideas for best practice within a classroom and how it can differ through the different key stages during somebody's schooling life.
Fantastic. So what is cultural capital?
So cultural capital is actually a term that has been around since the 1970s, coined by Pierre Bourdieu. It refers to the social and cultural knowledge that can help students make progress. So in terms of education, cultural capital should be woven through a curriculum, not just signposted as, say, lesson objectives, but it gives context and reference points that allow students to build this schema of knowledge and not just getting marks to pass a test. In fact, Amanda Spielman in 2019 said, it's about being able to learn about things and make sense of things for many that are outside their daily experience. And I think that's a very vital point when it looks at cultural capital and building that holistic learner.
Definitely. Could you give us an example of something that you would deem to be cultural capital knowledge?
Yeah, absolutely. So as mainly from a drama perspective, what we look at in our schemes of work going from Key Stage 3, 4 and above, we look at, for example, possible gaps in student knowledge, such as when we look at Greek theatre. Now, some students will know a bit about Greek theatre already, some students will have very limited knowledge of that. But then we link that through to all other schemes of work. For example, in mime, we do a unit of physical theatre in focusing on mime, and we look at the etymology of mime, coming from sort of Greek terminology, pantomimus, and sort of the idea of the word mimic. And we bring in that etymology of the word, so then students can start building those connections between. And it's more about not opening a door fully for them. It's giving them the skills and the links that they can then go, ah, I'm confident enough to go through that myself.
So almost like unlocking that sort of world there that sits behind the kind of more obvious thing that you're teaching the lesson.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, why do you think this is so important and relevant at this time in particular?
Well, in terms of cultural capital in its relevance, certainly from a teaching perspective, Ofsted reference their the implementation of cultural capital, and they've added the term cultural capital to their inspection handbook in 2019. They define it as the essential knowledge that pupils need to be educated citizens, introducing them to the best that has been thought and said, and helping to engender an appreciation of human creativity and achievement. Now, obviously, in terms of teacher and in terms of Ofsted, we have to start implementing that, of course. But in terms of holistic students, in fact, a lack of cultural capital can be seen when going up against academic achievement and especially gaps, particularly between richer and poorer students. For example, children on lowest income homes are half as likely to get good GCSEs and go on to higher education as compared to the national average. And particularly, what's more, the link between poverty and attainment is multiracial. So it doesn't matter in terms of ethnic group. We have this sort of rich versus poor attainment gap, comparing to, for example, children who are born into families who, for example, read books, newspapers, magazines, visit museums, go to art galleries, go and visit, for example, stately homes, go on international holidays, where they're constantly developing that cultural capital, where they're economically able to do so. We do see that gap widening in terms of achievement. And that's why I believe it's relevant to start building this in as much as we can into school.
Definitely. And I guess as well, aside from the academic achievement, it's also about being able to then go on to actually engage with the world around them in like a meaningful way and to understand where there's a reference to something on the news, for example, actually what sits behind that reference there. So it's, as you mentioned earlier, it's that really holistic aim, isn't it, that we have for the students in our care as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess in a couple of ways, it could be deemed as what we used to call cross-curricular links, where you learn about one thing in another subject and that gauges or sparks your interest in another subject and you start bridging those gaps to create those different links between your learning and to understand that not every subject is separate from one another. Yeah. We are all part of this one greater whole. And I think cultural capital is a massively important part of that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really useful way to think about it. I know you mentioned earlier about the different key stages. So do you think that we need to think differently about cultural capital at each key stage in the same way that we would do with other elements of progression for students?
Absolutely. And in terms of implementation at each key stage of education, what we found, certainly what I found within the research project, the different ways you can implement cultural capital, it's essentially how we could implement any kind of schema within a child's education. So, for example, at Key Stage 3, the links tend to be more specific, blocked. So they're often subject-related to avoid unnecessary tangents, and they're very linked to the scheme of work, essentially. But with those possible links elsewhere, what you would call often cross-curricular links most of the time. As you develop that knowledge into Key Stage 4, the information can become more contextual. You can start bringing in wider themes. You can start encouraging that more holistic approach to a scheme of work and encourage greater independent thought. So it's maybe you start sparking a bit of contextual knowledge, which then they go and research, and then they have that self-discovery of different ideas, which they may not have been exposed to just in the classroom. And then as you go on to Key Stage 5, as you've built on that from Key Stage 3 of subject-specific terminology and cross-curricular links to then their independent research, the information can become a lot more nuanced. It can become research-based questions where you've set them on a path. It can be reading different articles. It can be looking at peer-reviewed journals. It can be anything that can develop that academic hunger and that drive to continue to make those links and continue to develop their understanding.
I think that's really interesting because what I would say, reflecting back to earlier in my career and like what I've read about this beforehand, that I think it used to be thought of that cultural capital was more of a kind of ad hoc thing that, you know, if it was in the lesson, that was a good thing and you couldn't really plan for it. It just sort of happened through what you were talking about. But I think what you were saying is quite a powerful alternative to that, that actually this is something whereby we can't just rely on individual teachers saying, well, hang on, oh, this links to, you know, ancient Greek theatre, or this is like Gothic literature, because actually not all teachers are going to necessarily do that in the same way. So having it more of a sequential planned activity makes a lot more sense if we actually really take this seriously as something we want students to actually be able to know about in the future.
Oh, absolutely. And don't get me wrong, there will always be times within lessons, we're both teachers, where a student has said something and it sparked a different tangent, where we have explored a different theme or a different word, and that is still a vital part of child's education. Often, sometimes throughout a lesson, you could have planned a well-structured lesson, but the parts the child remembers are those little moments. and they are fundamentally important because they do spark that interest and we don't want to dampen a child's curiosity. But as you said, I think building this sort of sequential links and having these little banks of, oh, this links to this, and this is brought up in this, it does really link to a spiral curriculum that we strive for within definitely at Maiden Early. And the building of cultural capital within that really helps that, as you said. But in terms of teaching, I mean, the good news for teachers is, as especially in your subject specialism, we are facilitators of cultural capital. We have that developed understanding of our subject matter and how it holistically approaches to the wider viewpoint. And it's not the deviation of subject matter, but rather the addition of key different pieces of information that can bridge those gaps of knowledge. So if you are a teacher in a subject specialism, you are a facilitator of cultural capital by definition. It's just being aware of that and highlighting those links specifically.
Yeah, definitely. It's that enrichment, really, isn't it? In its truest sense of the word. I think a really important thing I would like people to kind of come away from this with, and I'm sure you agree the same, is actually having that understanding of this in the more kind of theoretical way that we've spoken about, but also having some real practical ideas for how this could be implemented in lessons. So I was wondering if there's anything that you have read about or you've actually tried and tested where you think, yeah, that actually has worked in a way to bring this into the lessons and make it really valuable.
Now, in terms of bringing it into lessons, I don't profess to be a master of every subject. So mine have become very drama-centric.
That's fine. We'll forgive that.
So linking back, well, for example, I do have an English example.
Brilliant.
That I have been fortunate enough to look at. So, for example, if teaching poetry is one of these things that I personally love, I absolutely love studying poetry. But I understand some year groups, some particular groups do not give poetry the time it deserves. But if, for example, you know something about the poet, so for example, it could be, say, Oscar Wilde, and there could be a part in the poem that you feel links to any underlying themes about his life, or if you feel that he is trying to explain a different metaphor apart from what's just on the page, you can introduce that and maybe some of the students already know. And that's great if they do. But that then just shows me that they have that wealth of knowledge already. But the children that don't, and then may be able to bridge those gaps, that is what this is for. It's not necessarily in terms of equality, giving every student X amount of support. It's about equity in terms of making sure that we are all building up to the same goals. And I think that's tremendously important.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about Oscar Wilde, even if you think of kind of the local context that we're in, the fact that he was imprisoned in Reading could be something that may captivate students' attention a lot more so than if they didn't know that information. And those links there can really support students in their engagement, which is obviously a whole other kettle of fish, but one that we're always thinking about as well. Do you have any drama examples?
Now, in terms of drama examples, again, when we look at our spiral curriculum, it's all about building on that prior knowledge. It's all about building these different links. And, for example, I know in history, you guys do a unit on, for example, Victorians, World War II and all of that. And we try to embed that within some of our schemes of work. And in terms of one of the units, we look at the actor's voice. We look at building vocal skills. We look at developing oracy skills, which, again, developing vocal skills through oracy skills is essentially a form of cultural capital in itself, because you're building those wider skills, that wider terminology and holistic viewpoint. But we look at, say, the poem Dulce Est Decorum Est, and we start exploring it in class, and you'd be amazed to see how many children in that unit go, have we looked at this in history? Go, yes, you have. You may have looked at it before, and then we have that discussion, not just about the poem, but we have that discussion about World War I and see how much they know. And then we start either filling in gaps or we start giving additional pieces of information to really strive that hunger for them. And then when it comes to performing it, because they now have that wider understanding of what is going on, we find a much more nuanced performance. Yeah. We find a much more sensitive performance instead of it just being a poem about war. Mm-hmm. We find a lot of the complex emotions being uncovered. And I think that's tremendously important because of those links.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice example, because I think sometimes when we talk about new things like being added into lessons, sometimes teachers can think quite instinctively, I think from all kinds of different perspectives, like, well, that's going to take away from the core, you know, purpose of that lesson. But I think the example that you've given there just shows that actually not only is it providing that wider enrichment in a holistic sense, but it also enriches and deepens understanding of the subject matter that you're trying to get across anyway, which was your core purpose. So it's that really mutually beneficial way of thinking about it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not without its challenges, though. For example, as subject specialists, we often assume knowledge sometimes and impart of the student. And especially in year 7 and 8, at Key Stage 3, sometimes they don't have that prior knowledge that we would expect them to have. And that is where we have to not just impart a well-structured lesson, but we also have to almost go, okay, where are these gaps? And it can be done through testing, it can be done through conversations. And then once we elicit those gaps, we can then implement necessary bits to help fill them and hopefully help them progress.
Yeah, absolutely. So finally, I was just wondering if you could give some advice to colleagues who are interested in exploring this further, interested in implementing it within their own lessons, maybe wanting to start conversations with colleagues in their department, within their Key Stage. What advice would you give to people in that sort of position?
In terms of advice, I would say that if you continue your best practice as a teacher, by default, you will be including cultural capital in one or many instances. If you are a subject specialist, you have the holistic knowledge needed in your subject. You understand the links. It's all about bringing those to the forefront. It could be a starter activity, which sometimes based in recall, can you recall these terms? Or it could be a thinking task. Can you think of where other subjects might use these skills and build that conversation in? But also, there are many resources out there online. I know the Education Endowment Foundation, they have a lot of brilliant resources into cultural capital. The True Education Partnerships, they have some wonderful stuff on Ofsted's approach to cultural capital as well. It's well worth a look. But I would just say, get out into your lessons, look at your schemes of work. If you're a head of department, have a look at some lesson observations and see what your frontline teachers are doing. And you'll be amazed at how many of these conversations often go under the radar, but are so vital to a student's development.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great advice. And I guess as well, just having those conversations in the department meeting about if you've got a unit where maybe it doesn't feel like there is as much cultural capital going on as another one, actually we'll have that conversation about, well, where can we bring it in? You know, could we all make that link in lesson four so that that could then be brought back again when they're doing the performance, whatever it might be at the end, I guess would be really helpful as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think this has been really, really inspiring, actually, a really nice episode of MetPod to get us started, and particularly at this time of year when, you know, we're really firing on all cylinders in terms of our thinking and thinking, you know, ahead to what we actually want to achieve this year. I think this is a great time for this. So thank you very much, Josh, for all of the effort that you've put into your work on this, both at Maiden Early, but also in preparing for this episode of MetPod as well.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and we hope that you will join us for the next episode next month.